Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. So my interview today was a real treat. I felt so privileged to be interviewing director Stephen Campanelli about his new film, Indian Horse. And there's several reasons why I was so thrilled to be doing this. One, because Indian Horse is a new Canadian film based on the award-winning bestseller by Richard Wagamese, the book Indian Horse, kind of autobiographical to some degree, a novel about our First Nations, Métis, and Inuit folk in Canada. It's about hockey. It's about history. It's about residential schools. It's about forgiveness. And Stephen and I get into a little bit of that, and we get into the right from the establishing shot that Stephen, begins the film with. We know that we're rooted in this sense of mystery and deep Canadian history that we need to deal with. And we are dealing with it to some degree, but we've got such a long way to go. And Stephen and I get into that. And we talk about how Richard's quote about how stories are meant to heal. And we talk about the horse of change. And that will come up for you if you see the film and when you see the film, more importantly. And how words are so visual. Stephen talks a great deal about that. The other reason why it was such a treat for me is Stephen has been Clint Eastwood's Steadicam operator. And he's worked on all kinds of films. I think for the last 25 or 26 years, he's been working with Clint Eastwood. And Clint Eastwood is a executive producer of the film, which just takes it to a whole other level and gives it another reason why you need to get out and see this film. So coming right up, Stephen Campanelli and I talk about his new film that he's directed, Indian Horse, coming soon, truly coming soon to a theater near you. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my writing and speaking, and also facetofacelive.ca for more there too. We will be right at you momentarily with director Stephen Campanelli talking about his new film, Indian Horse. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest today. Stephen Campanelli is here with us, director of his new film, Indian Horse. Stephen, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, you're very welcome, David. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I can't believe we got you. This is fantastic. This is fantastic news. Believe it or not, I tried to get a hold of you at TIFF this year. I was down there, interviewed about 31 producers and directors this year. It was a bit of a crazy year for me, but
oh, wow.
But you and I just, our schedules didn't align, so thanks.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, no, but hey, listen, maybe we'll get to meet face-to-face at some point down the road. So,
for sure.
So let's dive right in. Indian Horse, first of all, congratulations on a gorgeous film and a deeply moving story. I mean, there's some beautiful moments. There's difficult moments, and I just wanted to say right out of the gate, congrats on that.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it, and I'm so honored and proud to have been a part of this, for sure.
So somebody said that Richard Wagamese's writing, Stephen, was you know, honest and brave and authentic. And my guess is you knew the man, you met him, you've read him and so on. Is that, can you say that that might be one of the things that, that pulled you in? His honesty, his authenticity?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, when I read, Indian Horse was the first book I read of his, and then I've been reading subsequent other ones, and he's just such a brilliant writer with the brutality and the honesty and the thoughtfulness he puts into all his words. And for me, being a visual storyteller as a cameraman, his words are very visual and poetic and cinematic is the right word, I would say, I guess. So that's what really struck me. As I was reading Indian Horse, I was already imagining the film, you know, I was already imagining the imagery. And when I met Richard Wagamese and we talked about this, he was saying, yeah, that's exactly it, exactly. So we were right on the same level, the same page right from the get-go, which was amazing.
I love this idea of words being visual. I mean, do you think that was something that was really intentional for him as a storyteller, or do you think it just came through because of his, I mean, his wife talks about his, well, he talks about it at great length in his writing, but his traumatic past, his deeply, I guess, wounded self, I guess you could say. I mean, do you think that has something to do with that visceral edge?
I would think so. I think, you know, a lot of writers write from what they've experienced. They write from their pain, they from suffering or joys or whatever. And I think Richard was definitely that. He, you know, he definitely lived through a lot of things that we read in the book, you know, and what parts we're not really sure. But you just know he's been through something because the way he writes is very personal and very visual, like we were saying. And I think you can only do that by experiencing it, unless you have, which he does have, this tremendous imagination, because you read some of his other books and the imagination, because they're all fiction, it's just spectacular. And he describes every character in such detail that you just can, again, see it in front of you. And that's the beauty of his writing, you know.
Do you find that there's, and help me out here, but I think you kind of bookend the film. Your establishing shot is I think, the beginnings of what is the end of the film. The nod to the great mystery, to the horse of change.
And right.
Is there a sense of that in Richard's writing as well, that you were really conscious of having that sort of woven in? Or do you feel that that just kind of made its way into the film because of your, you know, your passion and your desire to make a great film?
Well, I think it's everything that, you know, is on the screen and was in the script and was our guy was basically Richard. It was Richard's book.
Wow.
And his words just guided us. And, you know, that description of the horses of change, we must ride the horse of change to survive, is, you know, from the book, lifted from the book. And part of my contribution to the script, you know, Dennis Foon wrote this amazing, beautiful screenplay. But I still wanted more essence of Richard's book into the screenplay. And so some of those were the things that I pulled out of the book to, I believe that one was already in, but
right.
Some of the other stuff that I wanted to pull out of the book to put in the script, you know, Dennis and the producers were just right away, absolutely, got to put that in. Yes, definitely. And so again, it was all started at, you know, the genesis of Richard writing Indian Horse and just staying true to it as much as we could.
I love how you open the film with the quote, "Your words, your voice, our honor and privilege."
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
It's just, I mean, talk about setting a tone.
Oh boy, I know, right? I mean, again, it's still Richard, you know, even though he's no longer with us, he's still with us. I say it every screening we've ever had of this movie, he is there. I know he's just smiling, just so proud and happy that what he's done is he's brought so many people together, and that's the beauty of his storytelling. Now he's got a worldwide audience in the cinema that can see his words and his story, and that he's bringing together people that would never be together, you know, and it's just, that's the beauty. And I just know he's always in there, and he's always watching us, and he's always just very, very proud, you know, and it makes me really, really happy and, again, honored to be be a part of this, you know.
It's gotta change to I mean, when you have that sense of, I don't know about obligation, but that level of kind of import, you know, like, we want to tell this story, not only, we don't want to be true to it, but boy, there's a huge responsibility here, I would think.
Absolutely. It was a massive responsibility, you know, especially being a non-Indigenous director.
Right,
it was,
of course.
Yeah, it was a really big deal. And, you know, there was a lot of focus on that. They're like, why is a non-Indigenous director telling this Indigenous story? And I just say it's not a fact of Indigenous or non-Indigenous. It's a human story.
Yeah.
It's basically, you know, a lot of countries did this to their Native people, and Canada is no exception. And it's, you know, we as Canadians, we're always like, oh, Canadians are so nice.
That's right.
You know, right. Yes, we are. But look what we did to our yeah. beautiful Indigenous people. I said, we've got to talk about this. We've got to get this out in the light. And the good thing is, you know, Canada's done that now. It's a Reconciliation
right.
Commission,
right.
and no one's hiding it anymore. And that's part of this whole journey of Indian Horse. It's like, we're not hiding from this anymore. We're telling the story.
Right.
We're going to put it in your face. And it's part of history, and we just need to accept that. You
know? I had the honor of interviewing Dr. Marie Wilson about a year and a half ago. I was doing some work with the Canadian Race Relations Foundation, and we had about 30 minutes together, and just getting some, you know, some more... I just guess insight, you know, into those 94 calls to action, you know, and that sense of, you know, it feels so long ago, Stephen, and yet I watch your film and it's just so present. And we have so, you know, I think it's an understatement to say that we've got quite a bit of work to do.
Yes, that is a very big understatement. It's not going to happen overnight, and we have a lot of work to do. And I think this is just scratching at the surface right now. But if we can make more movies like Indian Horse and tell this story and get more books out. And I know Indian Horse now is part of the curriculum here in Ontario, and I know across Canada it's starting to be also.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so I'm thinking it's starting, you know, and
yeah.
we're going to give Indian Horse the movie to a lot of the educators across the country so they can show it to their students and continue the conversation.
Well, and let's give a shout out to the website as well. You've got resources there. You've got some history there about residential schools, some really difficult photos, frankly. I mean, iconic, I suppose, in their own way. But and you bring those into the credits at the end of the film in a beautiful way as well that just, I don't know, take you to a whole other level. You know, I just, you know, I watch a story, IndianHorse.ca, I believe, is the website.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, so check it out for our listeners. You know... There's just a sense where you watch this and you don't want to believe it, you know?
Yes.
Where, not because we're Canadians are nice and generous, I don't mean that. I just, how did anyone ever think this kind of hatred, this kind of racism, this kind of anger was a good idea? Like, I just, it's
exactly.
just mind-boggling.
It really is, and you can't imagine it. I mean, you look in this day and age and, you know, yeah, sure, racism still exists all over the world, but... It's not to this level of what we did to these beautiful people, put them in these horrible schools and take them away from their families. And I describe it to people that have kids, and I have a 14-and-a-half-year-old daughter. I said, imagine if someone came into your home with a piece of paper and said, oh, yeah, we're taking your kids away. Like, what? Like, what parent would go, oh, okay. You know, it's like it's a horrible thing.
Off you go.
Off you go. Yeah. You know, it's horrible that we just forced them to abandon their children, and they didn't know where they went half the time. And then, as you know, a lot of them tried to escape, and they died in the process. And it's just a horrible story. So that's why I'm glad we're talking about it. That's the great thing, is that we're getting the conversation going. You know,
the scene in the film, and I don't want to give too much away for people who are hopefully going to be going to see it coming out, by the way, in mid-April. Is it North American release? What's the plan?
It's an all Canadian release. At Cineplex Odeon theaters all across Canada. Yeah, April 13th.
Okay,
April
good. 13th. Good, and we'll push that out on social as well for you.
Awesome.
So there's a scene where there's a Christmas play, a Christmas pageant, I guess you could say, being put on by some of the young the children, the students, and being directed by the teachers, and they're singing hymns, and then they're singing Silent Night, and you cross cut it with a really horrific, violent scene, and again, it just, there's a sense, and I want to sort of bring that, tie that back to the really right near the beginning of the film where one of your characters says, well, if you don't understand where we've been, you know, how can we possibly, you know, move into the future? And there's a sense in which I don't think Canadians, I don't think North Americans really get it.
No, they don't. Exactly. Yeah, you can't have a future without history, you know, and you'll never know where you're going if you don't know where you've been. And that's the whole premise of the movie, is that you need to discuss and see what happened in the past to be able to move into the future. And I think that's where we're at right now as a country. It's like we're admitting what happened in our past. We're not proud of it. We're ashamed of it. We're trying to have some reconciliation. But like you said earlier, it's just going to take a long time.
I love the way I guess Richard, but I love the way you and your team kind of rooted the salvation, if I can use that word, or the redemption, I guess the redemptive part of this story and film in on the ice. You know, it's without a doubt, connected to hockey and rooted in the game and so on in this art of play. But for me, one of my favorite parts of the film was. Saul's learning how to skate.
Oh yeah. And then it's a nice release from all the horrible things we're seeing, and that there's this moment of just pure innocence and just pure escapism. And I think we as Canadians all remember our first time on the ice, and we think we're, you know, Jean Béliveau or Bobby Orr or whatever, and we're just going to get out there, and, you know, and then it just boom, it just turns into this, you know, ankles bent and falling.
That's
and,
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, for me it was Bobby Orr, and then I think Daryl Sittler actually. I'm old enough to say that.
Yeah.
Bobby Orr. There were a few others. I actually lived in Montreal for a couple of years, and Frank Mahovlich.
Cool. Oh, of course.
Down the road, and no Absolutely. Kidding, Stephen, I knocked on his door, and I got his autograph. I was about 7 years old, if you can believe that.
Oh, so, that is beautiful.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty...
That is beautiful. I was a goalie when I was a kid, and okay. I was a huge Ken Dryden fan.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He was my idol, and I knew where he lived in NDG, where I grew up, and I would stand outside of his apartment building sometimes waiting to see if I'd catch a glimpse, and I never got to meet him and never saw him. So if he's listening, hopefully someday we can do that.
That's so good. Those kind of stories are so cool. And you know what's interesting? I'm gonna pull in Richard here. I believe Richard said in One Native Life, I'm gonna screw up the quote because I'm gonna make it too simple. But basically, telling our stories allows us to heal. And you know, here you and I never met, commiserating over, you know, as kids talking about hockey. You know, what is that going to lead us to? As we start to unpack our lives together, right? If we were going to choose to do that, and then you beautifully bring that into the end of the film as well, where there's a woman sort of at the, I'm guessing it's at the session where she says the more you talk about it, what is it? The healing takes place inside you.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. That's Edna. She's the grandmother
movie.
Yeah, she plays the grandmother in the movie, and that's her voice talking about that. Because she was taken away to residential school when she was 6 years old. So she's telling this story to leave it as her legacy and to show what happened and what went on. So she's just this beautiful, beautiful soul and wonderful woman that, you know, speaks what she felt. She speaks from the heart, and that was one of her quotes, exactly, is the healing takes place while you're talking about it.
Was it important to you to have, you know, not just actors in the film, but non-First Nations, Métis, Inuit actors as well?
Very important to stay as authentic as possible, you know, because it's an Ojibwe story, but it's also, you know, all the other band story too.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
It's all across Canada and the United States too, of course. And so it was very important to cast as realistically as we could. And we got very lucky. We got some really amazing, talented Ojibwe actors. And my goal from the beginning was not to cast. I mean, there's a great pool of wonderful Indigenous actors all across Canada and the United States. And, you know, and I just didn't want the ones that were recognized. Like APTN has some great shows and wonderful cast. And I said, I don't want the ones that are known across Canada. I want people that are unknown. You'll believe them in this story so much. So I got very, very fortunate that I got this amazing, you know, almost unknown cast that just blew the movie away, you know.
Speaking of fortune, can we talk a little about you for a second before we get back to the film and the story? So tell me, how, pray tell, did you get Clint Eastwood involved?
I've been working with Clint Eastwood for 24 years as his camera operator, and you know, we have a great tight bond, and you know, it's a wonderful, beautiful relationship. And basically, as a director, I've learned everything from the master, and he's just really, you know, taught me everything and supported me about performances and acting and all that. So I showed in the movie, boy, a couple months after I was still working on the edit, but it was getting pretty close, and I wanted to get his opinion and see it. And I told him about it, and he says, "Well, that's going to be a great story. You know, let me see it when you finish." Anyway, so I flew to Warner Brothers, and we saw it at a small little screening room, and beautiful big screen though. It was like six of us in the theater, the producers of his last movie, and Clint, of course, and I sat right next to him, and he was still. He didn't move at all. Like, he was watching the movie, just transfixed. And I kept looking over. I thought, well, I hope he didn't fall asleep. But he was mesmerized. And literally when the credits came up and the lights came back on, he just turned to me and he says, "This is really, really good." And I went, "Oh, wow, thank you." And he goes, "No, it's really good." And he got up and just said, "How can I help?" And wow. To get people to see this movie, and you know, because he knows it's just it's a little Canadian movie, and he right. says people need to see this story. He was right. upset as I was, like, how can we do this to these beautiful people? And he said, and I said, "Well, boss, if you could call him boss," I said, "if we could get your name to help promote the movie," right away, without a hesitation, he says, "Absolutely, use my name, do what you need, get people to see this movie." And it's just beautiful that he's been a champion of this movie, and we're just blessed that he came on board and. He's a big believer in the First Nations.
Well, I gotta just say I'm a huge fan and have been for years of Clint Eastwood. So, I mean, when I saw the executive producing credit, I just went, "Wow, that's pretty cool." And how did that happen? And then I started to of course do a little more research. I saw your history. Wow, have you got an impressive a file as well? The work that you've done over the years, it's really quite remarkable. But what an amazing affirmation, right? To have you say the master sitting beside you to turn to you and say, "Okay, what do we do to get people to see this film?" Isn't that the best exclamation mark you could get?
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing better. Now, I guess I reached, I hope I haven't reached the pinnacle of my career, but
funny.
That was definitely one of them. But,
sure.
I'm looking to direct more stuff, and I really actually want to direct more of Richard Wagamese's books. They're just
so
good.
Is that right, eh? I have a bit of a, I guess I can't say it's a regret. It's just unfortunate, but one of the publicists working on Richard's, can't remember the name of the publisher, but of several of his last, I don't know, three or four books, I suppose, was trying to get an interview for my podcast with Richard. And as we know, he didn't die that long ago. And it's just such a tragedy.
Ago, yeah.
So young. And
it's huge
just,
loss.
Yeah, it's so tragic.
Huge loss.
Huge loss indeed. It's
Just for Canada, but for the world. I mean, he's just such a great writer. And I'll be fully honest, I don't get to read much anymore. But, and a lot of people don't. And that's why I think Indian Horse, the movie, is a really great tool for people that don't read anymore. It's like, go see the movie. It's an hour and a half. You'll get to learn a lot about what happened, and hopefully it'll affect some change. But reading Richard's books, it's just amazing how beautifully they're written and how his characters are just so defined. And
can I ask you a little bit about the creative process? And sadly, we've got to get you to another meeting in a few minutes, so we're gonna have to wrap it up in a couple minutes here. But you're working with your cinematographer, your DOP, who I know is quite accredited as well. And your writer and you, and you come to a scene like on the ice with the figurines. I mean, is that something that's totally written in, Stephen, or is that the kind of thing that you guys, your team sort of says, how can we really, because that's a powerful scene. How can we really, so many like that throughout the film, but how do we drive that home? Do you sort of, or is it more of an intuitive thing than that?
That's a good question. I mean, again, that came from Richard's book. So it was it was our jobs as filmmakers to go, all right, how do we take those words and put them on a screen? And that's my job as a director. I mean, that's literally the job description is no one gets to read the script. My job is to take those words and put it on the screen so you get that imagery. And so that actually, I'm glad you brought that up. It was probably one of the hardest things to film and to really transpose from the book to the screen because, how do we film it? How do we get the impact? We don't want to make it too heavy or too out of the blue. And how could this happen? So it was a fine line. And it was, I talked with my cinematographer, Yves Blanger, and we figured out, we would shoot it in slow motion. We would shoot it with wide angle lens up close onto the ice. So, we did definitely had discussions about it and how to do it. And, on these smaller budget movies, you got to work really, really fast. And to be honest, I would have loved to have more time and really done it in a slightly different way, but
right.
I'm very proud and happy how it turned out. So sometimes when you are pressed for time or you have to really come up with ingenuity instantly, and that's what we ended up doing and getting what we did and what we put in the movie. So, yeah, like you said, it's very powerful imagery at that moment.
It really is, and it's powerful for so many reasons because I think so many of us have probably been lying flat on the ice like that, feeling a little humiliated, like actually flying mm-hmm. flat on the ice, and if not metaphorically. And then to see that kind of, I don't know, the deep-seated, again, we're back to that racism, the hatred, the
right.
How could you ever treat somebody, you know, another human being like this. And I know it's easy to stand on, you know, a soapbox and point fingers and so on, and we're all guilty and we're all complicit in
right.
one way or another, it seems to me, but it just really brings the one of the narratives of the film really drives it home in such a significant way. And maybe it's back to your original comment about Richard writing with words that were so visual.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it definitely comes back to that. And that's what my job as director was I needed to make you feel. I needed to make you feel his words. And that was, you know, I was not going to say the toughest thing, but because Richard's words are so powerful.
Yeah,
but
sure.
It was part of my journey to really get the essence of what he was saying and how do I make an audience feel the emotion and the brutality of what happens. And, you know, I don't want to depress everybody. The whole film is not a depressing. There's beautiful moments
absolutely.
In the film. And in the end, you come away with the resilience of our wonderful First Nations people about how they are so resilient and they're still here and they're never giving up. And that to me is the metaphor for life. You know, it's you never give up. You need to find who you are. And as you know, in the movie, the essence of finding your home, your true home.
Yeah. You know what? I'm so glad you brought that up because I wanted to talk about that idea of home, but the three H's for me, can I go with the three H's?
Yeah, sure.
Humility, hope, and home were the three
beautiful.
Big themes for me that I'm getting, actually, as crazy as it sounds, Stephen, I'm getting goosebumps while we're chatting, man. And I, again,
great.
I, sadly, we got to wrap it up, but what a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much for a brilliant, moving, and important film. It's, I hope everybody, not only in Canada sees it, but this, I hope it goes global.
That's what we're hoping too. I think the world needs to see this movie all over the world because it's, you know, it's happened. A lot of countries have done this to their indigenous people. So it's
absolutely.
It's like I said at the beginning, it's a human story, not just a Canadian story. It needs to be seen. So thank you for your kind words, David. I really appreciate it. And a really great interview. Thank you. Thanks.
So just before we let you go, IndianHorse.ca coming out April 13th, wide in Canada at Cineplex, coming soon to a theater near you. And we've been talking with Stephen Campanelli today, director of Indian Horse. Again, Stephen, thanks so much for your time today.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Really great. Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.